Hi, my name is Luis Sayas, and the title of my presentation is Independent Living and Informal Support Among Community Dwelling Puerto Rican Elderly. I'm an assistant professor in the School of Social Work at Arizona State University, and I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues in this presentation, Angela Wisniewski from the University at Buffalo, and Terry Kennedy from Arizona State University as well. I'd like to start with some background regarding the populations that I'm addressing, Hispanics in general and Puerto Ricans in specific, before I address the study. We have that the Hispanic population in the U.S. is expected to triple by 2050, and that the number of Hispanic elderly is expected to increase nearly sixfold by 2050. In 2008, we have that 19.3% of Hispanic elderly lived in poverty, compared to 7.6% of non-Hispanic whites, and that 15% of Hispanic men and 26% of Hispanic women over the age of 65 live alone, which, as you know, poverty and living alone increases the risk for negative health outcomes and for developing functional disabilities. According to the Administration on Aging, in 2008, one in three Hispanic elders aged 65 and over reported their health status as poor, compared to almost one in four non-Hispanic white elders. Hispanic older adults have also been found to experience disparities in chronic and disabling medical conditions, and also inequities in access to prevention and treatment services in the healthcare system. Now, we have, according to the U.S. Census Bureau in 2011, we find that the largest Hispanic groups in the U.S. are Mexican, 63%, Puerto Rican, 9.2%, and Cubans, 3.5%. There's they counted 32 million Mexican Americans, or Mexicans, people of Mexican background, I mean, 4.624 million Puerto Ricans in the United States. As you may know, there will be that does not include those who live in the island of Puerto Rico, which would be a little under 4 million also. Now, there are notable distinctions in health status among these subgroups of Hispanic elders, but oftentimes we tend to study Hispanics as a large group, and I'm interested in looking at Puerto Ricans in this particular case. A study found that Puerto Rican older adults have a higher prevalence of chronic health conditions than those reported nationally for Mexican Americans and non-Hispanic white elders. And also found, other study found that Puerto Rican have higher mortality rates than Mexican and Cuban elderly. I can set you all the statistics, but I thought I'd pick these two to summarize some trends. With regards to functional status, Puerto Rican elderly experience higher rates of functional impairment compared to non-Hispanic white, according to one study, and compared to other Hispanic groups. Now, the latter comparison with Hispanic groups comes from old studies from the late 1990s. I had problems finding more recent studies that focus on Puerto Rican elderly. There's disparity in functional impairment increase with low socioeconomic status. We have that also from the census that Puerto Ricans had the highest percentage of families earning incomes below $5,000 a year, and from $5,000 to $14,999 compared to other Hispanic groups. And also that one in three Hispanic elders live in households that are linguistically isolated. That does not, it's not specific to Puerto Ricans, but may be relevant, which also increases their risk factors. Most Hispanic older adults rely on relatives, as we know, for independent living support. And now, as many of you know, in Hispanic as well as in other collectivist cultures, Adult children or close relatives are expected to be primary caregivers of Hispanic elderly. Such is the case among Puerto Ricans, and I'll never forget one time when my 89-year-old grandfather, I'm from Puerto Rico, told my mother, my aunt, and myself, in no equivocal terms, I took care of all of you, and now it's your turn to take care of me, as we were discussing nursing care options. Daughters and sons have played a differential, very important, but differential roles as primary caregivers of Puerto Rican elderly, and most of the literature looking at the caregiver's role with Puerto Ricans have been done by Delgado and Tensted, written extensively on the topic, although, like I mentioned, mostly during the 1990s, with very little literature about Puerto Ricans more recent, which I'm trying to contribute. Besides financial and system barriers, we also find that social cultural barriers to formal support among Puerto Ricans, the belief that elderly care issues should be solved within the family has prevented oftentimes many Hispanic caregivers from seeking needed assistance. Now, the purpose of my study is to explore how indigent Puerto Rican older adults maintain independent living in the community while managing chronic illness by assessing socioeconomic status, health status, quality of life, functional status, focusing on the instrumental activities of daily living, and assessing informal and formal support. The goal is to inform interventions that leverage cultural strengths and minimize barriers to self-care, help promote wellness, prolong independent living, and improve quality of life. Now, I conducted a cross-sectional study using a concurrent mixed methods with an embedded small qualitative component within the larger quantitative set of instruments. It was a consecutive sample of 49 elderly patients presenting at an inner-city primary care clinic in Buffalo, New York. There are very few Puerto Ricans in Arizona, where I'm from, so this is a previous study I conducted before I arrived to Arizona. Eligibility criteria, age 70 years or older, Puerto Rican ethnicity, being a pre-existing patient at the clinic for at least for a year, and community dwelling. We originally wanted to do the study with Hispanics in general, but this was a predominantly Puerto Rican community, and the clinic was in the community. So when we said, well, let's just interview 50, it's just a small pilot project. And so when we got to 50, we had one Cuban, everybody else was Puerto Rican, so we decided to exclude the Cuban and just make it completely Puerto Rican. I know. Other eligibility criteria is at least one diagnosed chronic illness or more, and these were the chronic illness that we were looking for. With regards to data collection, we conducted face-to-face interviews at the primary care clinic, obtained informed consent before we proceeded with the interview data collection. We administered the 6-item screener for mental health status. If they did not pass the screener, we would interview a relative or a guardian that came with them. The instruments, we administer a socioeconomic, health, and social support questionnaire. Then we administer the instrumental activities of daily living instrument by Lawton and Brody. And the interesting component is that the instrument asked if they need some help, no help, or can't do at all with each of these instrumental activities of daily living. And now if they said that they could not do at all or that they needed some help, I pull my audio recorder. I'm a qualitative researcher, by the way. I pull my tape recorder and I ask them, so who helps you and how do they help you? And then we recorded that, and that became qualitative data that was embedded within the larger quantitative study for me to analyze this support system a little bit more in depth. And we also conducted a chart review of their medical records. With regards to the quantitative analysis, We just simply analyze for frequencies, percentages, means, and standard deviations. We're using SPSS. And then the qualitative data I analyze using a direct content analysis, which is deductive rather than inductive procedure. And I use the 8 IADL categories as a priori codes. And then I looked at the qualitative data, and then I coded it according to these particular IADL categories. Now, this is the diagram of the recruitment and data collection process in terms of assenting participants, administering the 6-item screener. Then if they did not pass it, then we would see if the guardian would consent to this, doing the study. Then we did the IADL assessment, then we collected demographics, and then we also collected SF-12 quality of life instrument information, and then chart review. Now, some results, or the results, with regards to demographics and socioeconomic status, we find that the mean age was 76 years of age, very balanced in terms of male-female, most had little education, and most had annual incomes of under $15,000. Most have been in the United States for more than 20 years. Most spoke Spanish at home. Most were either Catholic or of Pentecostal religion, and all had health insurance, all 49. With regards to health and social support, the average 6 chronic medical conditions, plus or minus 2. About 1/5 did not pass the mental health screener. About half, a little bit over 1/3, could not manage chronic illness well. Half indicated health problems limited their quality of life. About 1/3 were married. About 1/3 did not live with another adult. Almost half said sons or daughters helped them most with everyday needs. And 29% almost said their spouse did. And about 1/3 said that they had some, but not as much help as needed, or did not have someone to help them the last 4 weeks. Now, this is a table of our results with regards to needing help with those instrumental activities of daily living. I'll just briefly address qualitatively the two that they needed help the least and the two that they needed help the most. They needed help the least with using the telephone. Only 18% of them needed help with that. 5 of 9 did not pass the mental health screener. Help was provided by a relative, spouse, daughter, or son who lived with them, and by dialing the phone number for them. One informant responded, the phone has big numbers and I dial, I almost don't call and only attend calls. Most had visual or hearing limitations, osteoarthritis, and or were dependent for most IADLs. The other instrumental activity that they needed the least help was with taking medications. 23% said they needed at least some help taking medications. 7 of 11, as if with the other example, did not pass the mental health screener. Help was provided by spouse, daughter, son, or daughter-in-law. And I'll just read just one or two examples. I, the daughter, helped giving her the amount of medicine at the time because she gets confused, and I don't have anyone to help me. Sometimes I forget, I do it myself. With regards to those activities that they needed the most help, they needed the most help with traveling to places beyond walking distance. 71% needed at least some help. 53% could not do it all. They rely mainly on relatives, children, but also on the extended family. In a few cases, informal, non-relative informal support was offered. The one case in which they referred to formal support, the aide takes me in a car, and also I call the clinic and make appointments and they send a van. Very few people who said that they needed help or could not do at all that I audio recorded, very few of them referred to any formal support. Housekeeping was also another activity that they needed the most help, 47% of them. There's some examples of what they were referring to in terms of help. Interestingly, I was able to understand or better get a sense of how their chronic illnesses affect, their fulfilling those activities. So, for example, one respondent mentioned that I can't deal with the dust, I can't use detergent, I have asthma, so she can't go downstairs and do the cleaning. The daughter of this other respondent said, I clean, I do everything because my mom's nerves do not let her. Some other examples with regards to housekeeping, somebody who didn't have any help at all. Nobody helps me. I have to manage alone to keep my house clean. I cannot do it, but I do it asking God for help because it is all I have in this earth. I get short of breath and nauseous and have to sit down to get oxygen to start again. So just to give you an example of what they were telling me when I asked them how they meet those instrumental activities that they're living for a better understanding of their experiences. In conclusion, I've already run out of time, but very briefly, we concluded that, we can say that Puerto Rican elderly rely mostly on relatives, mainly children and spouses, but also on their extended family, and that most needed at least some help with one or more instrumental activity of daily living. Qualitative findings corroborate the quantitative findings, but also provide a context on how these needs are being met. The family support plays a critical support role, yet may sometimes be inadequate and insufficient, as was documented in our surveys and in our qualitative interviews. One-third of the sample did not have someone available as much as needed or at all to help in the past 4 weeks. And there was little documentation of formal support for instrumental activity with daily living help. Study limitations and study strengths. Small sample, no comparison group. We can perhaps doubt whether the caregiving respondents actually reflect the elderly participants' opinions, and the strength of the homogeneous sample, standardized instruments, and the qualitative methods of probing for how they actually meet, who helps them, and how they actually meet those IADL activities that they cannot do themselves. With regards to implications for future research and future research, the study fits well with our conference theme. Frail Puerto Rican elders and their family caregivers may benefit from culturally grounded and linguistically accessible coordination to access available in-home and community-based support services. Perhaps the IADL instrument could be part of a patient clinical assessment and maintained in the medical chart. Future research, perhaps assess the impact of having that instrument in the medical chart, and also perhaps in the future conducting in-depth and mixed method study of elderly Puerto Ricans and primary caregiver's role, strengths, and burdens, not just the caregiver or the elderly caregiving recipient, but both in their interaction and from multiple methodological lenses. Thank you.